Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, the host. With me is Phil Condon. How are you doing?
Yes,
there,
good
Phil?
Afternoon, Phil.
Today we're going to talk to Vanessa Bealey, 21st Century Wire. She has been reporting from Damascus / East Ghouta on the final defeat of the terrorist forces there and the liberation of that region by the Syrian army. And we want to get the very latest, because there's some dispute about what is happening with the – there was one last stronghold called Douma, and I know that Vanessa will have the answer. And second half, we're going to talk to Norman Otis Richmond, a bluesologist. Today is the birthday of Marvin Gaye, and Marvin Gaye was a strong fighter for civil rights and against racism in America, a very important voice in that, and, of course – magnificent voice. And so in the latter part of the show, Phil Conlon is going to talk to us about the report we did last Monday on the demonstration at the Royal York Hotel. By practically all, every representative of organized labor was there, so that's really important. And along the way, particularly in the latter part, we'll be talking about the events in Gaza. The fact that I think now the total is 18 killed, there are at least 800 wounded, and the key thing you want to hear, in my opinion, is the word sniper, because the Israeli army deployed snipers, and I would call that's a tactical, strategic decision with a great political consequence. A sniper does hit what he shoots at. This is not random shooting. It's not an accidental shooting. And matter of fact, Israeli defense said that. We know where the bullets are going. So we have about at least 800 bullets to discuss. You can see there's going to be some tremendous consequences. It was called the March of Return, and there's going to be demonstrations by the Gazan population, no doubt other Palestinians, for throughout this period leading up to May 15, called Nakba. For update on that, by the way, I really urge people to go to David Heap has a Twitter account, and he's been telling his followers the information he has. And we interviewed David on the show, Canada Boat to Gaza. And he is reminding us of details that everybody should know. And, of course, you should, if you don't do anything else, you should follow Charmaine Narwani, Narwani, a wonderful journalist based in Lebanon. And you can always go to the Angry Arab, a University of California professor. There's a writer who is quite entertaining and also full of information, Partisan Girl. And there's Mondo Weiss. There's a lot of good sites to go to. I really urge people, particularly those who want to see you want to see some footage. You want to see pictures that you probably wouldn't otherwise see. And so at the moment, we are not able yet to reach Vanessa. So we're going to work on that. And Phil and I will talk about his news. And one thing, Phil, you have Canadian news on the Gaza story. And
yes,
that
we
is
do.
That Jagmeet Singh, leader of the NDP. Go ahead.
This is a tweet sent out by Jagmeet Singh. I am shocked by the violence in Gaza. The Canadian government must call on Israel to abide by its responsibilities under international law and call for an independent investigation. The killing, human rights violations, and blockade must end.
Yeah, that's Jagmeet Singh. That I don't think anything comparable has come from the Prime Minister's office, and I don't think anything comparable has come from the Conservative Party. Am I right?
Yes.
Has anything come from them?
No,
they're not saying anything.
They're not saying anything, but in these kind of situations, you just nothing here, folks. Look at something else.
Yes. And I guess that would now we're going to have to include the Green Party.
Right.
I've not heard a word. I know that so many Canadians are focused on this question because thank goodness the Canada Boat to Gaza and many others have been tackling this issue. Independent Jewish Voices and others. And so we do have a sensitized population. So when someone of any note says anything, they do tell us, and we are learning from those who've been active on the question of the Palestinian. A lot of this has been focused in the West Bank, but today it is Gaza. But they would tell us if some important statement has been made. One thing you said, Phil, that I noticed, and I'm sure you followed this, the New York Times always calls when 18 people are shot by the Israeli army, they call it clashes.
Yes, clashes.
And the Globe is into the clashes mode, or violence broke out, demonstration/riot. But really only one side has an army and is armed.
And there's a fence. Right? Pardon me? There's a fence.
Fence.
The Gazans and the Israelis are on opposite sides of a fence.
Yes.
The Israelis are shooting over or through that fence to kill 18 people.
Well, they're not soldiers. These are ordinary soldiers. These are snipers. Yeah. Sniper is a particularly troubling phenomenon in any field. We've talked about it on this show. There was an American film about so-called American Sniper, and they made him into a god of war. And actually, a sniper is not the most honorable. It's not the highly thought of, because we all understand that the person who's about to be shot doesn't know there's anybody anywhere near them. It's not battle in that sense. I understand it, so we're parsing things rather finely, but there's always been a question of how significant they are. But when you deploy them in front of rioters, that's obviously your intention is to scare them away. So unfortunately, the Gazan population, the population has a very desperate situation. The material conditions are indisputably deteriorating. All the international groups that look into these things and accumulate the data say things are really getting worse. And so you get a population that can't move without the say-so of the Egyptians to the south and the Israelis to the east. They become desperate. These are people who should be able to have lives like anybody else. They should enjoy the same civil rights as a population, anybody else, but they don't. And so this is a very imaginative idea, approaching the border and pointing out that they have the right of return, those who had lived in what is now called Israel and was Palestine. And in according to the hoaxers who talk about these things, we're supposed to one day have two states. Nobody believes that's going to happen. Or it certainly doesn't. Mr. Netanyahu, Mr. Trump would not inspire confidence. So the Gazans, very imaginatively, have this idea, go to the border, and because you put your living expression of the argument, we're here, we want to return. How do you turn us away? Under what law do you turn us away? Which, by the way, brings me to the Pope. I've seen that the Pope yesterday, and this is kind of an important occasion, if you're not familiar with Christianity, this is kind of a big day, the Pope spoke, and no, the Toronto Star and the Globe did not indicate that he said something very important. He said unarmed people were shot. Unarmed, he said. Now, again, when you talk about violence, if one side is unarmed and they're killed by the one who is armed, for all the political noise one might make afterward, those are two different people, types of choices. And they didn't stress that. The reports did. You have to go to some trouble. I find this interesting. This is the second time on the Taylor Report that we're having to tell people what the Pope said because he wasn't reported. His remarks have not been conveyed because those who protect us from false news, that is to say, from news, they protect us. Didn't think we should hear that. And that's where we are. So anyway, it's very highly, highly significant that these things are occurring the way they are. We'll be talking now. I just mentioned Nakba is May 5, right?
May 15?
May 15?
Yeah.
I'll look at my dates.
That's what you said.
You're going to go there, right, Phil? We're going to make. Yeah, you're right. It's May 15. Phil's going to be going, be reporting from the scene on May 15, and at the Nakba in at the Gaza border. Just he's applying for his visa now. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Another important announcement we want to make is that Winnie Mandela died at the age of 81 in South Africa. To my mind, she deserves all kinds of respect. She went through a hellacious experience with her husband in prison and on Robben Island. And, you know, people sort of manage news and manage coverage. But the apartheid government made her life hell. And she spent a lot of time at police headquarters, a lot of time incarcerated, because she went from one place to another when she wasn't supposed to. And by the way, she kept the faith of the African National Congress. And so post the liberation of Nelson Mandela, her life in a way didn't change because though she was his wife and stood up for him and took all the grief that had to come to her, she also had a strong political opinion of her own. She was not a creature of Nelson Mandela. And she did not agree with the strategy, overall strategy, and the path taken by the African National Congress. And she said so. And she had, therefore, to differ with Nelson himself and everybody else. And there was a wing of the party that she was close to, very important. And which said, we made this promise to the people, to the masses, to the poor. They're the ones who expected their lives to change. But she says, what you introduced here is a capitalist order, which was not on part of our program. We're not racialists. We're not going to persecute anybody. But distribution of wealth is kind of an important subject, particularly if you don't have any. Winnie Mandela maintained that point of view. I did have the good fortune of making the acquaintance of a dear friend of hers, Fatima Meer, F-A-T-I-M-A-M-E-E-R, who was one of the stalwarts of the African National Congress and a scholar and written many brilliant books, highly respected. And she always stood at the side of Winnie Mandela. When Winnie was being, particularly in the Canadian and American press and the British press, they just went crazy on Winnie Mandela. She couldn't make a move without their trying to mock her. I want you to know that Fatima Meer is the first official biographer of Nelson Mandela. When he got out of prison, the plan was that Fatima Meer would write the definitive book, and she did write it. But you won't find that in the public library, I tell you. No, it's because it's a very good book. It's a very honest book. It's also written by someone who called him, he's my comrade, Nelson Mandela's my comrade. And he had been in her home prior to his, matter of fact, the last house he visited was Fatima Meer's father. Her father was one of the ANC leaders. So it was the American ambassador who gave away Nelson's position. They were trying to show good faith, the ANC, in trying to work out a negotiation. So the Americans pretended that they were sympathetic. And they said, we need to meet him, and we need to, no, we're going to start up a dialogue. They were not embracing the ANC at all. But they said, well, you know, we're going to try to understand. Well, what they did was turn him in. And he ended up captured. They didn't like him for the very reason that John McCain and McCain didn't like him. He was either a communist or a pro-communist. He was a friend of Moscow. That's all you needed to know. Just fast forward 2018. Nelson's a friend of Moscow. End of story, right? Do I have to explain anything else? No, it's all over. Story explained. But there were these people like Winnie Mandela and Fatima Meer, who didn't change their hat to suit the occasion. They wore the hat they always wore. And so both of them insisted on standing by the program, the original program, the ANC. And then there were the ones who Nelson was released, they maintained that point of view. And both of them suffered for it. Fatima Mir passed away a couple of years ago. But if you want to know the story of Winnie, I'd say go to the woman who respected her and knew her intimately, and that would be you can learn two women's stories at once, and both of them were solid fighters against apartheid, but not only against, as they say, they were for something, and they intended for there to be a revolutionary South Africa and a socialist South Africa. So anyway, that's want to make sure we have told you about that we've lost Winnie Mandela. And it would be the occasion also to say we're sorry to say that we've also lost a good friend of CIUT and of the Taylor Report and of many of the programs here, and Tom Powers. And Tom Powers was an outstanding fighter in the best way. He was an understated, very strong, very reliable person. I would call him totally good guy. And he was not into the speech making stuff. He was into doing, and he worked in Cuba Solidarity from the time I knew him. I actually met him through another great guy, Tom De Castro, who had gone to Venezuela. So Tom had gone to help out in Venezuela. Tom Powers had gone to help with Cuba. But mainly he was trying to fight the lies and propaganda that is directed at that country. But he was an all-around wonderful guy, a good friend of CIUT. And we do already miss him. It's a painful matter. We're going to return to this subject. Phil, you remember Tom Powers.
He was a great friend and fan of my program, Classical Underground.
There you go. I left that out.
And I had some wonderful discussions with him about some of the music we played.
Yeah. He was quietly cerebral. He was
very
one of those people who were very much on – understood so many things.
And, oh, he did.
And was understated in the way he approached matters. But he was one of those people who you wouldn't see him for a long time, and you knew that if you picked up the phone and spoke to him, you were – and to be on the same page. You were not going to have to say, well, let's go over all the things. You know, no, he's up to speed. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to talk a little later with Otis Richmond, but, you know, we have some music. We're going to talk to him about Marvin Gaye, because today is Marvin Gaye's birthday. And we'll play a little bit of Marvin Gaye, and we'll be back. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. My apologies that we weren't able to reach Vanessa Beely today, I suspect. Vanessa has been in Damascus at East Ghouta. She writes 21st Century Wire. Go to that site. It's very up-to-date. And she and Canada's own Eva Bartlett are journalists who go there. Very close to where the action is. And we really need this kind of reporting. I get a kick out of the way. You know, I read the reports on East Ghouta, and there's a war that goes on amongst media. They say the Assad media says. Okay, well, the Assad media, so-called, what they mean is, that those who see the war as one of a foreign national sovereignty, for a war against a foreign intervention in the affairs of a sovereign country, and a war against self-avowed terrorists, people who do believe that in cutting heads off people, children, people who believe in sectarian fighting. You know, one of the things I was going to ask Vanessa is that now we have Easter being celebrated in Aleppo, because a year ago, Aleppo was liberated. If people are Christians or believe in a secular government or respect all faiths, it's good news that Christians now in Aleppo can celebrate Easter, because before, under the rule of the so-called Islamic forces, actually, to me, they're a fraud. They're really just terrorist operation with a veneer. But they made it a point to wage sectarian warfare, persecute Christians. And they even had slogans about driving them out totally. So I know that Vanessa and others were there and pointed out this. What else is liberation? If you have a population that's not able to practice its faith, it persecuted and loses its homes and territory because of their faith or their identity, then when you conquer the people who've done that to them, you are a liberator. And that's what it has been. These areas have been liberated. There is the question I was going to put to her, it's worth our listeners thinking about, is that now in Ghouta, they have East Ghouta, that is the suburb of Damascus. The fighting, as far as I can tell, is basically over. The one remaining question was Douma, a place called Douma, D-O-U-M-A, where the group called Jaish al-Islam was holding out. Apropos of reporting, Vanessa said it's over. They are being removed. And the Al Jazeera and others who are clandestine or basic supporters of the terrorist group, they said, no, it's not true. Well, it is true. So guess what? Vanessa reported accurately, and these other guys did not. So they think by labeling, saying, oh, that's a pro-Assad. Well, I don't, you know, the pro, I'm interested, anti, I'm interested. But who got it right? And Vanessa got it right. And Eva Bartlett got it right. So all you're telling me is if I see this where somebody say pro-Assad, then I guess I should read them because apparently they get the story right, as opposed to USOBs who lie to me all the time and every day of the week. By the way, the main way they lie is by omission. They simply don't tell us. There's certainly no reporting on how the corridors were established, and humanitarian corridors where people could leave East Ghouta. And they did leave by the tens of thousands and came to the government side. So the Globe, Star, CBC did not want you to know that, or even don't we want you to think about it. Meanwhile, in Syria, where the U.S. forces bombed in support of their friends, they didn't create any corridors. If you were there, you're stuck. That's your tough luck. Again, that's where we're not getting anything resembling honest reporting. And on the subject of false news, every journal reports based on the sympathies of its publisher. That's what they do. And if you don't know that, I can't help you. If you think somebody's objective because he says he's objective, that don't mean nothing. I'm sorry, you're going to have to do your homework and find out what is so and what is not so. Further on the matter of removal, they put them in buses. One group is going to Idlib. When I say one group, two organizations, Felak al-Rahman and Arar al-Sham are going to Idlib. This last group, the one at Douma, they're going to go to along the Euphrates River near the Turkish border, further to the east, and we'll see how that unfolds. But the fact was that in East Ghouta, these groups were fighting each other. Again, not reported by the Western media because they always call them the rebels, like they all agree. They didn't agree. They didn't even want to go the same. When they pulled them out of there, when they said, okay, I give up, after saying I'm going to fight to the death, they said, okay, I give up, and my wife and I and my cousins are now going to... So they couldn't go to the same place. This is Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. Lastly on the program, I want to make sure today, we have two things we're going to do. Phil Collins is going to read Jagmeet Singh's tweet, but I'm going to tell you that Judy Rever has written a wonderful book. It's in the Toronto Public Libraries, 16 copies. Order one now. or go to the bookstore and get it. It is going to be one of the books that lasts. It's called In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front. She's a great journalist, and I've started reading it, and I'm very impressed with the writing. You say to yourself, I'm in the hands of a very good writer, and you get a very clear picture. It's quite it's powerful, well-researched. Phil, we have this tweet from Jagmeet. The tweet from Jagmeet Singh, NDP leader.
I am shocked by the violence in Gaza. The Canadian government must call on Israel to abide by its responsibilities under international law and call for an independent investigation. The killing, human rights violations, and blockade must end.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Those are the words of Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the New Democratic Party, and they are in response to the events in Gaza and in Israel in the past.
Thank you, Phil. You're very diligent. I had stepped out to make sure that we could get a taste of Scott Herron as we go. And that is a National Party leader, and I'm waiting. Can we have a debate? Was that wrong?
Well, honestly, that's the first thing that any party leader has said that's any good in more than 15 years. So, I mean, it's a start.
In Britain, the Labour Party is celebrating the fact that Jeremy Corbyn has spoken up. We're coming out of a period of a kind of political coma where nothing was talked about. And everybody said, isn't that wonderful? Nobody talks about anything.